society at large. Which type of society we wish? Which type of inclusive society we wish? And that implies rethinking the role of the education in society. When the permanent secretary mentioned, or the representative of the permanent secretary mentioned, is fundamentally immoral, is saying that not providing, not ensuring an equal learning opportunity to every child is a road to poverty, to marginality, to segregation, to unjust societies. And that implies rethinking education, implies rethinking society. As we are saying also, that rethinking inclusive education implies rethinking the idea of education for all. So let me with you start with trying to share some ideas about how we position the discussion about inclusion, and our colleague has clearly set the stage, the tone for the discussion. And I believe that we have to be very careful, and you have the PowerPoint that Patricia has delivered to you, so I'm not going to go through all the slides you have there to deepen on that discussion, but I would like to highlight two main elements. One is try to make a case, to build a case for inclusion and for inclusive education. And secondly, as our colleague from Scotland's Association has mentioned, try to put emphasis on curricula. How curricula can be a tool for inclusion. The idea of that an inclusive curricula is a curricula that addresses the needs and the expectations of all learners. Of all learners. An inclusive curricula is not that one is that categorizes learners, that separates learners. It's not about that. You can have a so-called inclusive educational system with a one school model and you have segregation. Why? Because you don't have the capacity to address diversity. So what we are saying is that when we are talking about inclusive education, we are talking about that every school, independently of the profile of the school, have to be inclusive. It's not a matter of having inclusive schools and non-inclusive schools. It's not a matter of having common or special schools or regular schools. It's about that the mentality, the mindset of each school should be inclusive. And that's the point we want to make. And in that regard, we believe that there have been like three types of main policy discussion during the last years. And the minister has mentioned Salamanca. And I believe that we have to understand where we are positioned. What I'm saying is that you can address inclusion from different perspectives, from different stances, from different views. One possible understanding of inclusion was mainly in the 90s, where inclusion was mainly a response to special education and the debate and the complexity between integration and mainstreaming. And in the 90s, many countries said, okay, inclusion is about integration or incorporation of students with special needs in regular schools. And when we say that, one key problem of that, that incorporation of students with special needs in regular school is not only a matter of physical investment. It's not about a matter of physical accommodation or providing equipment. It also implies a big change in the curricula. So one element that comes from the discussion from all over the world, from Europe, from Latin America, from Asia, from different parts, is that many times inclusive education has been only providing physical facilities to provide access to students with special needs, and there was no changing of the curricula. And so even if they were in specials in regular schools, they were marginalized because the teachers don't have the tools, the ideas, the instruments to be inclusive. So you can have exclusion even in inclusive education systems. And that's very important to highlight from the very beginning. In the 90s, also there was this discussion about that inclusive education about prioritizing, giving priority to certain social groups, socioeconomic groups, migrants, culture, ethnic, gender. And that was a very strong movement towards inclusion. Inclusion is about addressing marginality. But also we have to be careful about that. Because many times we develop policies towards marginalized groups, and as a result, as a non-intended result, we segregate even more because we have second chance schools, second types of schools. I mean, we have schools that are for poor and that becomes poor schools. Or we have schools for marginalized and become marginalized schools. So we have to be very careful, very attentive to what, how we do, how we address marginality. Because many times marginality can result in something very differently in addressing marginality than what we expect. Now, this was the 90s. Inclusive education is about integration of students with special needs in regular schools. It's about targeting and responding to different groups, to different marginalized, to different excluded groups. Now, what happened in the first decade of this century, I mean, when we start talking about inclusive education as addressing diversity of learners? And here it arises the issue of diversity. UNESCO said that inclusion is a process of addressing and responding to the diversity of needs of all learners. So here inclusion is not about integration, it's not about mainstreaming, it's about effectively responding to the diversity of needs. The needs that our colleague has mentioned, the increasing cultural diversity of the schools and the classrooms. But diversity is not only about social aspects. Diversity is not only about culture factors. Diversity is also about personal diversity. The diversity of each learner, the uniqueness, the personality, the characteristics of each learner in itself. And what we have seen from many countries, that when we talk about diversity, they talk about diversity of groups, but they don't talk about diversity of learners. And that also is a great problem. Because a curricula that can be an effective tool for inclusion have to provide the tools, the ideas, the assessments required to address each learner itself. You are not going to get an inclusive curricula saying that you are going to address the needs of social groups, of different target groups. You have to provide the space, the room, the opportunities for each learner to develop. So one great problem about this idea of diversity, understanding only in a social and cultural element, is that we forget the diversity of the learners. And we tend to talk about diversity of groups. And also when we talk about diversity of groups, we have to be very careful if there is not an underlying assumption that we are so different that we don't have any common ground. We have to be very careful how diversity is understood. Diversity can be a tool for enhancing learning, but also can be a tool for separating learners and separating groups. Depends on how we define, depends on how we conceptualize diversity. So today when we have in the United Kingdom and in many countries the discussion about multiculturalism and the implication of multicultural societies, the underlying assumption is, do we want a society more inclusive? Implies that groups and people in a society have to share some values while respecting their diversity. There is no response to diversity if there is no common ground of values. And that's what our colleague has mentioned about curriculum frameworks of shared values and skills. I mean, a curricula cannot be a tool for separation of groups. Multiculturalism doesn't mean that you have to separate groups. You have to find common elements to all groups, common ideas, common values. If you don't have common values, how you're going to respect diversity? Diversity is not that everyone do what they want to do. It's that you have a common ground where you can build upon the respect, the understanding, and addressing the needs of the learners. So diversity has to be wholly rethinked in this process. Now, what happened in the international conference that our colleague has mentioned in 2008 and that you, Minister, have mentioned as a key element in addressing and broadening understanding of inclusion? That in 2008, ministers of education and Vice Minister of Education from all over the world, more than 100 ministers from Europe, Africa, Asia, Arab states, Latin American countries, and we got the excellent support of the European Agency for Development Special Needs Education as a great partner in fostering this agenda. That when we talk about inclusive education, we are talking about three key elements, and that's very much related to the minister has mentioned. First, that inclusive education is a general guiding principle to strengthen the education for sustainable development. You are not going to have sustained developed societies if you don't have inclusive education systems. Now, providing lifelong learning to all opportunities. Inclusion is not about formal settings. Inclusion is about formal settings, informal settings, non-formal settings, about providing opportunities all over along the life of the people. So it's not inclusion a problem of primary education, of secondary education, of teachers' education. It's something cross-cutting to all levels of educational systems, formal, non-formal, informal settings, provisions, curricula. So inclusive education is about this idea of also of democratizing learning opportunities, building more democratic education systems implies building more democratic societies. And why we are talking here in UNESCO about democratizing learning opportunities? Because democratizing learning opportunities doesn't mean only providing access to education. It implies process, participation, and outcomes. Equality today is not about access to primary education. Equality today is about diversifying process of learning in order to provide, in order to attain relevant learning outcomes. So when we talk about equality today, we are talking about process, participation, and outcomes, and not only access to education. So what we are saying today, that countries, that ministers of education from all over the world have agreed on this idea of inclusion. Inclusion is about providing the foundation for sustainable development. It's about providing opportunities for lifelong learning. It's about democratizing education. It's about building more inclusive societies. Now, what are key elements if we take this agenda? And so let's, where we position ourselves. If we understand what happened in the last 20 or 30 years in the world, we can say that inclusion is about broadening the concept of diversity. It's about getting a good idea how diversity is related to inclusive societies and to inclusive education. It's about targeting groups but not marginalizing them. It's about having common frameworks of values for all societies. How we do that, all that if we don't have the instruments? How we are going to achieve that if we continue to have, as the permanent secretary representative has mentioned, separate provisions, separate settings? How? It's impossible. If we don't understand that equity and quality go hand in hand. The experience from different countries, and in Europe, the experience of the Nordic countries, like the case of Finland, shows very clear that you attain quality when you have equitable educational systems. That equity and quality are not separate. Because equality is about providing quality education for all. An inclusive curriculum is about that. You cannot provide quality education if you attain the few, if you only target certain groups. I mean, if 25% of the student population have experienced a sense of barrier to learning, we don't have an inclusive curricula. It's impossible, because we cannot say that we have a high quality system if 25% of the population is excluded or is separated from the possibility of learning, experience a barrier to learning and to participation. So what we are saying, that the emphasis on equity and quality. Second element, what the minister has very clearly mentioned, the importance of long-term policies and visions. I mean, inclusion is a journey. It's like Mel Ansko, that you all know, and specialist for inclusion from Manchester, say, inclusion is a journey, an ongoing process to respond to the diversity of learners. So for that, you need long-term sustainable policies. You are not going to achieve inclusion in the short term. You're going to achieve inclusion if you can build on long-term sustainable social and educational policies, because education is at the same time a social and economic and culture policy. Education is about more equitable societies, it's about the foundation of development, and it's about respecting people and integrating different people in the society. So in this regard, we understand inclusion curricula as a tool for inclusion. And when we talk about curricula, let's be clear from the very beginning. Curricula is not only the document that is in the library or in the bookstore or in the office of the Minister of Education. Curricula is what happened in the school, what happened in the classroom. Curricula is about the relationship between the school and the community. It's about the teacher's practice. It's about the relation between teachers and students. It's about everyday life in the school. That's the curricula. That's the curricula implemented. That's the curricula attained. That's the curricula achieved. So if curricula is going to be a tool for inclusion, we have to have a very dynamic idea of curricula. And that implies, among other issues, two elements that we'd like to emphasize. One is that you are not going to get, or you are not going to attain, an inclusive curricula if you have separate provisions. You have to find a way that all provisions in education are connected and that are related, are interconnected between them. It's clear that you cannot separate secondary education from technical education. You have to have certain common basis of understanding and connection between secondary and technical education. It's clear that dropouts come from the lack of pedagogical understanding between primary teachers and secondary teachers. And if you separate primary from secondary teachers, the result is that you penalize the possibility of the learner many times. Why? Because teachers in primary education have different learning mindsets than teachers in secondary education. And that implies that sometimes a primary teacher teaches a student while a secondary teacher teaches a subject. And the transition between primary and secondary education is many times something very, very troublesome for the learner. Going from one reference, the teacher, to many references at the same time that are much more concerned with their subjects and with their disciplinary identities than with understanding the needs and the expectations of the learners. So a curricula for inclusion implies revisiting, revamping all the way the provisions of educational systems are related from early childhood onwards as the laying foundation of inclusion. The second element that's very important in this regard when we talk about curricula as a tool for inclusion is that assessment is part of the curricula. You cannot develop a curricula competency-based, as is the case in many countries and many regions and many places today, and you keep having a very exam-oriented, very summative assessment system. Because you cannot evaluate competencies through exams. You have to build up formative assessment. You have to have different alternatives, projects, interdisciplinary activities, collaborative work among teachers, etc. So assessment is part of the curricula. And it's very important to understand that, because the pressure today in many societies is to build a strong, very exam-oriented systems with no opportunities for learning. High-stakes exams, as it's many times mentioned. One key element today in curricula debates in the world is that this tendency, this international national tendency to put a lot of emphasis on exams and assessments and international assessments are not contemplated, are not grounded on diversifying learning process to achieve these achievements or to achieve these outcomes. What I'm saying is that if you put the emphasis on outcomes, but you don't put the emphasis on the process to get outcomes, you don't have a curricula as a tool for inclusion. If the curricula tend to separate the provisions, the learning materials, the learning methodologies from the outcomes as separate identities, you are not going to get inclusion. Inclusive curricula means rethinking all the assessments. And that implies a profound change in mindsets of policymakers, of supervisors, of principals, of teachers, and of the community, and of the community of the parents. Because parents many times are demanding that because they want to assure themselves that they get the best education for their children. And maybe they're not getting the best education for their children if they have a very strong exam-oriented system. So what we are saying is this discussion is not only a discussion inside the educational system. It's a discussion that implies talking a lot, understanding, removing fears, as our colleague has mentioned, from the communities. Because parents are very apprehensive to accept formative assessments, to accept different types of assessment. And also, parents and communities are very, very reticent many times to accept diversity. They want their children to be socialized, to be educated with children with their similar social and cultural backgrounds. Parents are many times very apprehensive to diversity learning environments. So, any response to inclusion implies rethinking the relation between schools and communities. And convincing parents that if you have an heterogeneous, a very diverse classroom setting, is an opportunity for enhancing learning, and it's not a barrier to learning. But parents many times believe and feel that having their children in very diverse, heterogeneous learning environments is an impediment, is a hindrance to their learning possibilities. I don't know how I'm in time, but you tell me because I can't. Just tell me. 5 minutes. Okay. Sorry for the. So, I'd like to. We're talking about curricula, and I would like to finish by saying, okay, there is two concepts that I want to highlight before I enter in the last point. Curricula is a tool for educational policies. You're not going to have long-term sustainable educational policies if you don't have good curricula proposals. Second element that's important in this discussion, we believe, is the links, the synergies between inclusive curricula, inclusive schools, and inclusive teachers. You can have a very inclusive curricula in the conceptualization, in the writing, in the strategies, but you don't have an inclusive schools and you don't have an inclusive teachers, you're not going to attain an inclusive curricula. So this implies rethinking inclusive teachers, and that implies more than teachers education. Teacher education is very important to reform teacher education and to address the issues that our colleague has mentioned, but also implies big mindset changes. Teachers are not going to respond to diversity if they are not convinced that diversity can help students learn more and better. If they believe that diversity is a hindrance to their teaching profession, nothing will happen. Even the best policy statements will clash in reality very severely. That implies that we have to convince teachers, we have to convince ourselves that diversity is positive and that teachers can use diversity as a tool for increase and for democratizing the opportunities of learners. So that implies five elements that I would like just to name them before our colleagues have to finish. First is that teachers need to be recognized, engaged, and empowered to be co-developers of the curricula. Teachers don't implement curricula. Teachers co-develop the curricula in the classrooms. The curricula is not something that comes from the Ministry of Education and said, OK, you go and do it. No, doesn't work. In the United Kingdom, in Africa, in Asia, Latin America, in any place, doesn't work. Teachers have to be engaged, have to be empowered to develop the curricula with accountability, but also with freedom and flexibility. Accountability for everyone. Accountability for everyone in the system. Because accountability is not only a matter of teacher, it's a matter of all the educational system at all levels. Because finally, the teacher is a policy maker in the classroom. The only policy maker in the classroom is the teacher. And if we don't engage and empower the teacher, nothing will happen. So that implies teachers, as the OECD has mentioned, active agents, and this idea of understanding better teachers, how they believe, how they think, how they do, what are their fears, their problems. We have to understand better the teachers. We have to understand the teachers better from their perspective, not from our perspective, from their beliefs, from their mindset, from their fears, many times they have. Second element, just to go quickly, is developing, we have talked about that, developing positive teachers' attitudes, tolerance, and understanding of inclusion and diversity. I mean, teachers have to be clearly believers in equity and excellence as going hand in hand. They have to be convinced of that. Many times they are not convinced of that. And we all know that dropouts, low learning outcomes, don't come only from outside factors of education. Come from entrenched educational factors, from how we understand people, how we relate to each other. So we have to develop this idea that teachers a sense of responsibility for all learners, for all learners, for all learners. And this idea that implies redefining mindsets, identities, and boundaries of teachers. I mean, teachers have to develop positive attitudes towards tolerance, diversity, to overcome racial prejudice, racial problems, to overcome religious separations. But that implies a process of positive attitudes toward tolerance. Third element I want to mention is engaging teachers as professionals. Teaching is a profession. We have to highlight, prioritize teachers as a profession. This idea that teaching is a knowledge-rich profession. Because many times we talk of professionals, of doctors, of lawyers, of engineers, but we don't have the same feeling and the same understanding and the same openness to say that teachers are professionals. We have to reinforce the idea that teachers are professionals as other professionals and they have to be respected, have to be supported as professionals. Fourth, and this implies core teacher competencies, and maybe Amanda, our friends Amanda and Verity will talk about that, implies core teaching competencies and relevant knowledge relating to learning difference. Teachers have to be well equipped to understand learning difference and to respond to learning difference. Fourth element is developing an understanding of the teacher within inclusive schools, communities, and societies. I mean, inclusion is not only an educational matter, it's essentially a society matter. So this implies that teachers have to have more dynamic, more open, more productive relationship with the community at large. And that implies rethinking the community from the teacher perspective and rethinking the teacher perspective from the community. Implies a double process. And this is because an opportunity for collaboration and supports. I mean, it's clear, and you in England and United Kingdom, you have very good examples of community of practice of teachers, how teachers can work each other, how they can improve their practice. I mean, putting people together. teachers, principals, supervisors, students, communities. And the other element is about the empowerment of teachers by society. I mean, you have to give the teachers the capacity, but also the need, the requirements to really advance in inclusion. And it implies that you have to have inclusive policy frameworks. Teachers can be inclusive if the inclusive policy is really inclusive. Because if we demand to teachers to be inclusive, and the educational system have very excluded practice, how they're going to be inclusive? So you have to have inclusive policy frameworks, legislation that is inclusive, support, and social recognition. Because inclusion is not only about classroom practice, it's not about teachers' mindsets, it's about how the educational system is structured and works to be truly inclusive. So inclusion is about visions, practice, all over. Because if you demand and you request and you make accountable teachers to be inclusive, and supervisors keep asking teachers for things that are not inclusive, how they are going to respond to that? Teachers have to be not only convinced, have to be sure that the system backs them, that the system supports them, that the educational system provides them the rationale, the foundation, the tools, the instruments to do things that are inclusive. So this implies also a society that believes in inclusion. This comes from the experience of Finland. I would like to read it as the last point. When work is based on the Finland experience of inclusion, and it's said by Hallinen, is director of curricula of Finland, of the Finnish educational system. And she said, when work is based on trust and confidence, with high expectation and supportive structures and procedures, people respond by trying to do their best. That's the key to success in education and certainly in inclusion. I mean, if you have trust, confidence, and high expectations. Because if teachers have high expectations about learners, learners learn more. That's universal. And you can find evidence, search, coming from Europe, as well from other regions of the world. So, implies a revolution of expectation. And revolutionizing expectations implies that society really want to be engaged in the inclusive education journey. So, to finalize, rethinking inclusive education implies rethinking the society we wish to attain. And we are not going to attain a more inclusive society if our educational system keeps having different excluded practice at the macro level, at the supervisor level, at the principal level, at the teacher level, at different levels. So rethinking inclusion is a way to attain more inclusive society. And that implies going to the beginning, coming back to the beginning of this conference, implies removing the moral, what our colleague has mentioned. If we maintain, if we keep selected, separated, segregated provisions, we are not going to be inclusive. If we have different provisions for different learners and we don't have common basis of understanding, we are not going to be inclusive. If we have schools that are not related to the community and don't want to understand the community, we are not going to be inclusive. If the teachers is reticent, doesn't want to address diversity, we are not going to be inclusive. If we keep the assessment separated from the curricula, we are not going to be inclusive. So what we are saying finally, that this new vision of inclusion that the Minister of Education and the Representative and Permanent Secretary has outlined implies revamping the educational system. It's not a matter of changing one thing, it's a matter of transforming of a holistic transformation of the educational system from the visions to the practice. Thank you very much.